I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louis the Computer Guy.
How's it going, Matt?
Going well. All right.
You know, it occurs to me that, like, when I hear a news story and they're talking about Russian bots, I mean, I know what that means. I think I know what that means.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I wonder if how many people out in the audience, because I find myself, like, thinking, I find myself falling into, like, the mistaken thinking that a Russian bot is, like, a person. But it's not. It's an artificial intelligence that is basically programmed to be, basically, to forward an agenda, right?
Is that? Well, maybe not so far as to be an artificial intelligence, but, you know, depending on the... depending on how advanced they are, it might blur the line there. I could certainly see that. But, you know, it's basically a computer that has access to a set of, you know, perhaps Twitter accounts or emails, or it could be all kinds of different things. But basically it's a computer program that's being instructed and conducted by, you know, a small group of people. And it may involve, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of computers sending out, you know, having all these accounts and logging in and doing all kinds of stuff to coerce and, you know, sway social media and all kinds of other things.
So how much interaction does, I mean, like, is there somebody like sitting on a couch with a remote control controlling the bot? Or, I mean, but that's not really a bot actually exactly, is it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so it just... And I guess I wanted to, first of all, our phone number is 963-2976 if anybody wants to weigh in on this conversation, or if your cables need jiggling, or...
Your printer's on the fritz.
Oh, look at there. We got somebody whose cables need jiggling already.
You're on with the geeks.
They got another phone call. I guess I guess the other phone call is more important than us.
No. It was the Russians.
It was Vladimir calling to set us straight about the bots.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, I would be interested to know, you know, how our listeners, you know, if any of our listeners have like made resolutions about how they're going to conduct themselves differently on social media, you know, now that it's kind of come out that, perhaps you can't believe everything you read on social media, which, truth be told, I knew that a couple of years ago. I knew that a number of years ago.
I was gonna say, this is old news, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like getting your news from, you know, a few sources. You really have to make an effort to make sure you're not in an echo chamber anymore, to make sure that you're getting the facts so you can make an informed decision on the situation.
Yeah, because, you know, I truly believe that, you know, we can technologically do a certain amount to, you know, to basically change the landscape. But it's one of those things where, you know what they say, if you make something idiot proof, they'll just invent a better idiot.
Absolutely. You know?
And I believe that there's a game of whack-a-mole that, you know, that we can waste all kinds of resources in, you know, trying to battle the Russians or whoever it is who wants to, you know, mess with our democratic process. And so, you know, I think what it really comes down to is individual responsibility. You know, it's basically checking the sources on stories that you read and, you know.
Yeah. Getting a few sources and making sure that everyone is, you know, more or less in agreement on, you know, what happened and the timeline and everything, and kind of and then extrapolate based on that on what you need to think about it based on your values.
Exactly. So did we ever talk about, I think, you know, I think I figured something out back, it was during the election, where I started getting all of these friend requests on Facebook from people that I thought I was already friends with. Did we already talk about
this? No, I don't think so. Okay.
Well, yeah, I started getting friend requests from all these people that I already thought I was friends with. And then my wife said something about having that happen to her. And then I had somebody send me a message on Facebook, a Facebook Messenger message, saying, don't accept friend requests from so-and-so. It's not really so-and-so. And they had a theory, or, you know, that that this person who was already in their friends list, who's trying to like send them another friend request, was trying to hack their Facebook account or something, or, you know, they were basically asserting that by accepting the friend request from this fake second version of this person, that something really horrible would, you know, that your Facebook account would collapse in on itself or something, you know.
I wouldn't go that far, but
yeah,
you know, so, you want to, when you're setting up an email or when you're considering your online privacy, mm-hmm. you need to consider what your account, what your publicly facing account looks like. So if somebody mm-hmm. is not your, you know, who's not your friend, but is a Facebook member, what does your profile look like to somebody like that? And you have to decide, mm-hmm. you know, do I want to say that, you know, my birth date, do I want to have email address, all kinds of stuff. You can control who sees what in your
exactly.
Facebook account, and you want to make sure that all that information is guarded appropriately, you know, for your choice. Mm-hmm.
And that's in your Facebook security settings, right?
I believe so, yeah. And so you can go and look at your profile as a public user and then as a friend, and you can control that information.
Yeah. You know, the darn thing about Facebook is that, I mean, 2 years ago, I could have told you exactly where to go to tweak that information. And then Facebook goes and changes the, they change where that stuff is located. But I think it's at the far upper right of your Facebook account, Facebook page, when you're logged in. There's a little triangle there that if you click on it, it'll drop down. And it can basically take you down to your settings. And you can tweak your security settings. That's a subgroup of that. Let's see, privacy is one of the sidebar options. And so anyway, so the way the scam goes is they find your publicly visible Facebook account with all of your friends publicly visible and your profile picture visible. Mm-hmm. And they basically do a screenshot of your profile picture. They create a new fake Facebook account under your name,
uh-huh.
using your profile picture. And then they go about sending friend requests to everybody
who they can see
is in your, who's all available or visible on your Facebook account. And, there you go. A Russian troll is born. At least that's my theory,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, it's a perfect scheme, really, if you think about it. It's, you know, what better way to really slip yourself, you know, kind of into the inner circles of a large number of Americans, you know? So another call coming in.
You're on with the Geeks.
Actually, it's the same call, but I had a business call come in at the same time, so.
We forgive you.
It's Craig and Rifle.
How you doing, Craig and Rifle?
Hanging in there, Louie. Hey, in your conversation, I was curious, did you see the Olympics?
Yes.
Any part of it, the closing or opening ceremony?
Yeah, I saw about maybe a third of the opening ceremony, and that was it.
Okay, so my question would be this. Did you see the drones doing the figures in the sky?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you think the United States, any company here, has the capability to pull that, to do that? That was extremely impressive.
Yeah.
Yes, I do too. However, I don't know if you, I caught a hold of one article that basically asserted that was a produced portion of the show, that people who are actually sitting in the stands couldn't see what we could see on TV.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
If that was so what you're saying is it may have been CGI instead?
No, I
or
think it was
like
that
recorded
it maybe had been previously recorded, and to basically in case they had any misfires.
Okay, so they were able to do, but they are able to do this. You believe that companies here could do the same thing?
They can certainly do it in a laboratory environment,
uh-huh.
for certain.
Matt,
but
I,
could they do it in the air?
It's a little more tricky because you have air currents and eddy currents,
sure.
and all those things. So, yeah. You know, we have the processing power, we have the coding, we have the technology. It's just a matter of if it can deal with all of the, you know, if it's a really still night, I don't think it'd have a problem with it. If there's a, you know, at some point the breeze becomes too much for it to deal with, and the, instead of being able to do the aerobatics, it has to deal with being able to fly. And so
yeah,
there's limitations on where the technology will work. You know, on a calm evening, I could see it working really well. But on a, you know, if there's any breeze or anything going on, it becomes much more difficult for it to be done.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. That was leading into the conversation about the bots. Do we have bots here? A lot as sophisticated as China, Korea, the United, Russia. Do you think that they have the thing? And the, this would lead me into this big thing that we need to move forward, since we don't seem to have a government that wants to try and protect us from that, that we need to start a movement now towards paper ballots for elections, back to paper ballots, which cannot be hacked.
Cool. I don't know if I'd agree with that. So,
well, you don't have to agree. It's just a conversation.
So what I would like to see is you do both. So you do some sort of hash so that you know the vote. You know, you can verify that information happened digitally. And then you have a paper printout that is easily readable, that has, the information in it, the votes, and then you save that. And if there's any, any whiff of
impropriety,
exactly, you go back and you go, okay, we're going to go through and we're going to, you know, make sure that the digital information matches the the paper thing. And you can also look at some sort of, you know, blockchain kind of technology where, votes in the certain areas are, stored in a blockchain, so that all the votes are stored on all the voting machines, you know, in a district or in a state or something like that, so that you can have another layer of accountability where it's really difficult to insert amalgamous information into a blockchain, because it has to happen everywhere. Not to say
well, that, apparently yeah. It doesn't, because if you just target certain areas, you certainly can skew national things with just, as the last election was 72,000 votes, pretty much decided three states.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're smart enough to go into certain areas, you can change an outcome with a small, very small footprint.
Right, and that's social engineering. That's not necessarily a technical thing. That's going in through Facebook or other social media outlets and manipulating people's opinion is social engineering, and that's much more difficult. That's something where you have to teach the person to be critical of other people's opinions.
No, I understand that as that argument were those votes, but it is possible in certain districts to even if the people had a different mindset, maybe their votes didn't reflect that. If they're sophisticated enough to, you don't have to do it on a national level, but if you can hack into voting machines, and there are stories that say that certain voting machines look like they were hacked. It doesn't matter if you go and press A, A records B, or every third A records B type.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I'm in like such a remedial place on technology and voting that I think we just flat out need to go to paper ballots.
Thank you. So it's 2-1.
I completely. Or at the very least, there needs to be some effort. First of all, I mean, the idea of like what genius came up with the idea of putting a voting machine online? You know,
really? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be connected?
Yeah.
To
exactly.
The state capitol.
Yeah. I mean, the minute you put something online, it's like. It's not a matter of if something's of value. It's not a matter of if it's going to get hacked. It's a matter of when it's going to get hacked.
Correct.
It's if the Pentagon got hacked, and supposedly we have our best and brightest, protecting the technology there. It's been hacked numerous times, and to me that's pretty basic that we shouldn't be doing that. But yeah, and the whole bot thing is really doesn't have anything to do with voting machines.
No, I know that. Yeah, but so, but yeah. You brought that conversation up, and so bots are robots doing certain things.
They're
and
part
robots
of the equation.
Are, right, exactly. I just thought it was like a nice little tie-in. The city of Rifle is part of a thing called MuniRev, where you're supposed to file your sales tax that we collect online. Uh-huh. And we have refused to do it. We go down there and hand them our thing and make them do it on their computer. And they said, you need to do this at your office. We go, no, all our client stuff is on our computers. So I said, if the Pentagon got hacked, how do we know MuniRevs doesn't get hacked?
Definitely.
So
yeah. Well,
and they're not happy with us that we make them do it.
Yeah.
So, but it's a block and a half walk for me to take it down there and wait for them to type it in.
Exactly. So. Well, you know, the interesting, I think that the whole concept of a digital divide needs to be, you know, we really need to start kind of leaning on that because, you know, I was just signing up for the IRS.gov online account. And if you can't provide the last 8 digits of a credit card, not a debit card, not an American Express card, but a credit card, or which, you know, fortunately I'm lucky enough that I do have that. I can give them that, or an auto, the number of your auto loan number, or your mortgage or home equity loan account number, or your home equity line of credit account number. If you can't give them one of those 4 pieces of information, you get thrown into and I don't even want to know what happens, you know, how long the queue is if I check this bottom box that says I don't have any of those things. I'm willing to bet you that I'm going to go into an 8-week vetting process, you know, to confirm.
No, they're going to figure you're so poor you're not worth messing with.
Well, I can only hope, and you've now encouraged me to do that. But,
Well, Louis, you are that poor.
Exactly. I'm a self-employed guy.
So anyway, back to your conversation. Thanks for the little thought process.
All right. Thanks a lot, Craig. Have a good
one. See you guys.
Take care.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KD&K. We have a few more minutes. 963-2976. Call in with your cable jiggling questions or whatever else.
If you're having problems with your bot, give us a call.
Yeah, if you've gone on the dark web and you've purchased a hacking toolkit, we'd love to look at that and get it working for you.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I've always kind of wondered, you know, if don't we technically have the technology to, you know, if North Korea is misbehaving, don't we just have the technology to just turn off their internet for a while?
There's 28 websites in North Korea.
To put them in timeout? Yeah, but all the bad traffic's all coming out of North Korea, not going into it. Anyway, we got another call.
I guess it depends on how many routes out there are. That's the question. You're on with Geeks.
Hey, Geeks, it's Donna. How are you?
Good.
We're good, Donna. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I have a quick question for you. I just got internet service here. They just gave me a modem. No,
are you in Florida now?
I am.
You sound different.
Now.
You sound different.
Oh, I do. Oh, here, let me. I have my headset on.
I was gonna say you sound humid.
Oh, that's funny. Oh yeah, good one. It's not too humid yet, but anyway, I thought that there was a way with my Windows 7 machine to turn it into a hotspot, or should I just? Until my router arrives, should I just go get a little MiFi
you should be able to do internet connection sharing on the, like if you have a laptop, you should be able to plug it in and do internet connection sharing and then do and program the Wi-Fi card to be an access point.
Oh, okay.
Yep, I've done it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a while, but
so I do that in done. Control panel under networking and just make it a shared.
Yeah, you basically go into the properties for the network adapter that you want to share, and there's a tab that says sharing at the top.
Yeah, I think you want to bridge it or something like that. It's been a while. You'll have to look it up online.
So I have to bridge the Wi-Fi to the Wi-Fi NIC to the wired neck?
Yeah, something like that. I'd go find some directions online exactly how to do that. But it'll be either be bridging or it'll say like share internet connection and it'll build the bridge for you automatically.
Yeah, and then I can turn my PC into a Wi-Fi hotspot temporarily, right?
Exactly, yeah. I set one up back in like September and I hadn't done it for a long time and I was able to Google it and it took me about 20 minutes. So,
sounds good.
Be a problem.
The other question is, you know, the reason I don't have a router is that I'm going to get a VPN router, one that somebody had recommended that I get one that's OpenWRT compatible. Do you know anything about those, how to set up your router as a VPN router?
So I use, it's not really a firmware, but it's a program called PFSense, which is a FreeBSD running on just an old computer that has two NIC cards. And so you go in there, and I think WRT, and it looks like WRT is merging back with LEDE, which is Linux Environment Development something or other. And anyway, OpenWRT has a whole bunch of hardware that it'll work with. Look, I saw a whole bunch of ASUS and many others in there. But OpenVPN is a program that'll run on either of those, and you'll run the client on your computer, and then you'll connect the client to your router. Usually, I have PFSense that it has a little export wizard. So you just go in there and say, create a user, create the password, create the certificate, and then you say, go through the export wizard, and it'll give you a installable file you can run on your computer that has all the credentials that you can log in. And then
do I have to have a router that has that OpenWRT compatibility, or can I set that up on my computer?
You see, I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, if your goal is that you want to be able to, are you doing this for security reasons that you just want basically?
I'm doing it because I have security clearance and I can't do anything on my laptop at work. And also when I'm traveling, you know, when I go into a Starbucks or something like that and I need to do banking, I don't want to do it on their network. So I VPN into my, I've been VPNing into my work, but I can't do that anymore with my new company. So I want to be able to VPN into my home and do whatever I want.
And I think there are some, there's some stock. I think OpenVPN has been kind of brought into some of the routers as a VPN option, including like IPsec and some other stuff. But I think there are some over the counter kind of routers that have that built in currently.
Okay.
But you'd have to go look for it.
Because generally a router will not, the only time you would really want VPN on a router would be either to set up a persistent VPN connection, you know, point to point with another endpoint, which you'd have to have full cooperation with the people on the other end. Or I would recommend, I play with these little things, they're called snap gears, and you can pick them up on eBay for like $60. And it has a dial-in VPN server. See, and you just really simply, you go in and set up a username and password, and then you just set your VPN to dial into that IP address. So we'll talk about it more next week.
That sounds great. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Take care, Donna.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer. From Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Hey, thanks a lot for running the board, Matt.
Absolutely.
Y'all have a great week. And don't touch your knob.